Hello, hello. So here we are. We are on lecture number 9. So if you think about it, we just have 4 short lectures left to go. And that's it for international business. So how exciting, right? I mean, think about where we were when we started this class and where we are now. And we've learned quite a bit. I've learned quite a bit talking to you. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity to guide you on this journey to understanding international business as we now transition to lecture number 9, International Competitive Strategy. And for this one, we're going to be talking about Hilton. You have that to look forward to when we get to our international brand. So let's talk about international strategy. So what is international strategy? And I alluded to this as I concluded lecture number 8, that it's concerned with the way that firms make choices in developing and deploying their scarce resources internationally. So strategy must be consistent amongst the various functions, so HR, marketing, et cetera, products and regional units, which also must have internal consistency. So the overall strategy has to be consistent, and then the internal strategy and the regional strategy also has to be consistent. In other words, you don't want to have radically different values for each of your brands, or else the company is going to fall apart. So the goal of international strategy is to achieve competitive advantage. That's what it's all about. It's having a competitive advantage, and that's the ability to have a unique and valuable competitive position within the nation and globally, which generates higher rates of profit than its competitors. So you must have a few competencies to do that. We'll talk about those in a second. But if we look at Apple for a second, you can see that Apple has a competitive advantage, which allows them to charge a little bit of a higher price for their products than other companies. So they have a competitive advantage. So you have to create value for which customers are willing to pay. You do that through offering something that is rare. That's one way to have a competitive advantage. You have something that's difficult to imitate or substitute for, you have something that has a feature that people want as well, Apple is known its products for good design. So allow a firm to be organized to fully exploit the competitive potential from these competencies is radically important. So the organizing of the company to take advantage of their competitive advantage is important. Otherwise, they're not maximizing their profits and they're not doing what that business is seeking to do. So there are several challenges for international companies, obviously, when we're talking about competitive advantage. One of them is that resources are always scarce. So there's not enough people, there's not enough money, there's not enough whatever to do your job effectively. Where are the alternatives for these scarce resources? Where are the alternatives where these resources are not equally attractive? Managers and leaders must make decisions on what to do. So if you have scarce resources, you have to decide what you're willing to give up to get the resources you need. So say you had $1,000, and where do you put that $1,000? If you have 4, 5, or 6 different needs, managers have to decide where to put those scarce resources and how to use them effectively. So part of that is strategic planning. And that's the process that an organization uses to determine where it's going in the future, how it will get there, and to what extent it has achieved its goals. Maybe you have worked for a company or you've heard of companies doing strategic plans. Certainly, a company that I'm involved with is doing strategic planning right now. Those kind of questions that I just mentioned are questions that we are grappling with. So formal global strategic planning provides managers a way to identify opportunities and threats, to formulate their strategies to handle them, and stipulate how to finance their implementation. So it gives consistency and makes sure everybody is rowing in the same boat. So you have a strategic plan. Let's say you want to have 20% of market share or whatever. I know that's not a larger goal, but you want 20% of market share. Well, then everybody knows the target is 20% of market share, and they can then work toward that goal. Strategic planning is intended to increase the likelihood of innovation, promotes the development, capture, and application of new ideas, and really does this in a competitive environment. And the way that works is because if you're going through strategic planning and you got to find ways to do things within reduced resources and the scarcity of resources and things like that, then you innovate in order to meet those goals. So if you have that 20% goal, but you only have one salesman and that person has to operate around the country, then maybe you find other ways to innovate to be able to make your product known for everybody else. So those are all reasons to do strategic planning, and that's why it's the most commonly used management tool that executives use on a global level. And it has the highest levels of satisfaction as well. So there is always a process, right? So there is a process for strategic planning, and there's a formal structure that's provided for analyzing external environments, in analyzing the internal environments, because remember, you got to look at internally and you got to look at externally as well, defining the business and the mission and setting corporate objectives, formulating strategies, making tactical plans, qualifying goals. There's a process for all this. So the step one is to analyze domestic, international, and foreign environment. So you got to understand those forces, and we've talked about all those forces, right? The political forces, the economic forces, the legal forces, all those forces that we've talked about, all those things that make up the environment. An analysis has to be done, and you need to understand how to implement appropriate responses to those environmental sources. For instance, say you open up in a country tomorrow that's a democracy, and then they become a socialist, and they take your business and nationalize it. What are you going to do? You know, that's some of the questions. Or what if they change key legal environments to make your product illegal in that country? What are you going to do? So environmental, social, and business trends are more critical to strategy than in the past 5 years, although few companies are prepared for them. That's, again, because we work in and live in a hyper-turbulent, complex world, and that complexity and that hyper-turbulence make it difficult to plan for. But you need to plan, have strategies to respond to crisis and to effectuate change that will keep your company successful. And we saw many examples of that during COVID where people had to change their model in order to be successful. You got to analyze corporate controllable variables. So that's a situational analysis and forecast. So you provide input to the planning staff who then provides input to a planning committee. So the committee wants to know where the company is heading, what its strengths and weaknesses are, who are the customers, what value does it deliver, and how is value created. So the value chain is important because you need to understand the value of your company to understand your customers. So, you know, I talked about the closet organizer in an earlier lecture that when I was talking about disposable income. And this person organizes your life, organizes closets, organizes your space to make the most effective use of them. Now, there is incredible value in that, but if she, in this case is she, if she doesn't sell what she's and shows people what the value of that is, then her business may eventually die. Like, she needs to show people that her business can save, 20% off of your morning chores in the morning, or living in an efficient workspace makes you 10% more productive or 30% happier, whatever that value is. Firms need to understand and want to understand what value they bring and what value they provide. So that is very, very, very important. So you know that management will look at various value chains, parts of the value chain, will look at linkages, and they will manage their relationships with both internal and external people, external being suppliers, distributors, customers, and that happens not only within their host country, but the other countries as well. So, you know, as we've talked about and as we continue to talk about, as we build competitive advantage, you know, there's a lot of complexity that is involved in establishing the value of your product or service and the value of your company, and then also the competitive the complexity of getting a competitive advantage when you're competing on a global stage. Another one is knowledge as a controllable corporate resource. So understanding that knowledge is important, knowledge management is important. Sometimes you'll hear this called institutional knowledge. And, you know, I've been with a place for the last 8 years. I've been there longer than my boss, who's been there 4 years, so I'm able to give him history, background, and bring in other factors that he may not have considered before, which gives him incredible institutional knowledge and helps him to make decisions and to be effective at his job. So, you know, knowing that valuable knowledge is tactic, that means it's known but it's difficult to express in a written document, is important as well. So you have to foster that knowledge. You have to give people a way to share that knowledge. You have to give people a way to build on institutional knowledge and understand the value of it. So if you have very, very, very high turnover, that's not going to be good for your company, because ultimately, with that kind of turnover, you're losing all that institutional knowledge, you're losing all that knowledge management and that knowledge transfer that needs to occur. For example, a place I worked just lost somebody with incredible knowledge. This person was the go-to. So you would go to her if you had a question, and then she either knew the answer or knew where to find the answer. So she saved a lot of time. She left, the new person wasn't identified, and there was a lot of institutional and knowledge that knowledge transfer that was lost that the company is contending with. Now, and to be honest with you, they're quite behind the power curve. So understanding that and mechanizing that is important. You got to define the corporate mission, vision, and values. And remember, this is going to communicate to the stakeholders, not just the shareholders, but the stakeholders, what the company is, where it expects to go, where it's operating, what it values, all those things. And that's what I was saying earlier, with your competitive your values cannot be different across the different nations that you operate in. You need to fundamentally be true to yourself. Remember that a mission statement defines the purpose and scope. A vision statement is aspirational, and it describes where you want to be in the future. And then a value statement is the fundamental values, beliefs, and priorities of the organizational members. You want to set corporate objectives. So that's the direct the firm's course of action, maintain it within the boundaries of the stated mission, ensure its continued existence. So a corporate objective I talked about earlier might be to have 20% market share or whatever. You got to quantify those objectives. So if you can't quantify the objectives, then it's a pretty hard target to meet, right? So if I say I want to increase my market share, well, if I go from 3 to 4%, oh, I increased my market share. I met an objective. But was that a good quantifiable goal? When if that was my target to increase by 1%, maybe I could have increased by 10%, or maybe I could have increased by 5%. The point is that you need to have quantifiable terms so people know what targets that they're trying to achieve. You got to formulate competitive strategies. So managers will formulate alternative competitive strategies and action plans that seem plausible, that take in consideration external forces, as well as the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats of the organization. So you should always have a way to go, but you should always have contingencies as well. Companies that compete internationally confront two opposing forces. That's adaptation to local markets. We've talked a little bit about that. When you go into a local market from a marketing standpoint, you got to understand, like the Kentucky Fried Chicken, eat your fingers off or whatever it was. That was obviously the wrong move. Also the way your workforce force will operate in a competitive market. And then reduction of costs. So you have to do what you can to lower the costs. Because you don't want people to think your products are too expensive. So you get competitive advantage by reducing your cost, which you can accomplish through gaining efficiencies. That's why concepts like Six Sigma and other concepts that try to teach you to be more efficient are critical. They really give you an advantage over other firms. And then also understanding your market and also understanding that sometimes you're going to have to modify your product to meet local demands. For instance, if you do a burger shop in a place where people don't eat meat, obviously your product's going to have to make some major revisions before people will purchase the product. Thankfully, there's things like Impossible Meat, which is delicious as a vegetarian, I can tell you. So a consequence of two opposing pressures, which is the local adaptation we just talked about and the reduction of costs, there's different strategies that companies can use to compete internationally. There's quite a few. I'm not going to go through them all, but I will make mention to a few of them. So a home replication strategy. That centralizes product development in the home country, so all products are developed in the home country, and then they create differentiated products after that, and then they're transferred abroad. So, think about a product that is come up with in the United States, and then it's sold overseas. Reason for this choice, and that's if there is weak pressure for local responsiveness and cost reduction. Because you gotta worry about high operating costs in that instance. A multi-domestic strategy is when there's strong pressure to adopt products or services for local markets. So decision-making is decentralized to allow people in that home market to adapt to what the home market wants, and they'll make changes on the fly. On the fly, and adapt their strategy to make sure that they're meeting the local market and maintaining a competitive advantage over local competition as well. If you adapt products too much, then you take away the distinctiveness of those products, and that is a fear as well. So it's a balancing act, like everything. You adapt to meet the local demands, but you don't adapt too much and lose your identity and go away from the mission, vision, and core values that you have. Sales forecasts and budgets help with strategic planning. They're used as a control technique and also as a planning technique. If you have a budget of $100,000, you're going to have to make some choices. That would be different than if you somebody gave you $20 million and asked you to create a budget. Create a strategic plan. So you gotta understand your priorities and your budget, and then how it relates to what you're trying to accomplish. When we're talking about other tools that are used to create a strategic plan, there's facilitation tools. So you gotta keep in mind that that upper management will sometimes create policies that surround these strategic plans, and that's to help assist people in the formulation of the strategic plan and the implementation of that. And then procedures will ensure uniformity when carrying out the strategic plan as well. So procedures are used, obviously policies are used, budget, Salesforce, those kind of things. I'm sorry, sales forecast. Performance measures, so you can measure the success of your strategic plan, and you need to do that, and you need to have periodic checks to see if you need to modify your goals. For instance, say your target is to capture 20% of the market, and you end up with 40% of the market in month four. Well, then you obviously need to adjust your forecasting, and you need to go back and you need to figure out if your goals need adjusted. So remember, a strategic plan is set, but you always have to have that feedback loop to make sure that you are doing what is necessary to make it successful. Let's see. So there's different kinds of strategic plans. There's the time horizon, which is over the next 10 years, we will. There is short, medium, and long-term ones. Remember that time horizon is going to vary based on the age of the firm and the stability of its market. So a very new company, their strategic plan will look differently than it would if a company's been around for 100 years. And then keep in mind also that an organizational plan will be an overarching plan, but then each unit will have their own individual goals and desires and outcomes as well that are related to the strategic plan. So we are getting there. So think about strategic planning, competitive advantage, and how important this strategic planning is to the competitive advantage. So it's critically important to develop good strategic plans. So keep in mind that you can do top-down planning, which is corporate headquarters develop these plans and then pushes it down. The problem with this is that it restricts initiatives at the lower levels. Sometimes you have hard to get buy-in. And then the advantage is that headquarters should be able to formulate plans that best use the firm's resources. You can also do bottom-up, which the people who want to obtain the goals or are most responsible for that are formulating the plan. The disadvantage is that the plans may not coincide with headquarters. Iterative planning kind of does both, where the top does their plan, bottom does their plan, they come together and they develop a strategic plan. So strategic planning, in the more traditional bureaucratic form, is practiced at some corporations. It's been described as a calendar-driven ritual. It's not an exploration of the company's potential. So if you think about that, there are some companies who are like, oh, great, it's 5 years. We have to go do our strategic plan now. You know, instead of looking at it as a way to really set the direction of the firm. So that's something to keep in mind is if you own a company, especially an international company, you need to really, really, really think about your goals, your values, and those kind of things. Obviously, if you approach it that way, then you're going to have failure to implement everything you want to do successfully. So that is a common problem. There is a new approach, and that's a strategic management approach, which combines strategic planning with strategic thinking, strategic implementation, and that lets the functional line managers really come up with a strategic plan. And takes the decision away from career people whose job it is to do strategic planning and really puts it into the people who are on the bottom floor and can make those decisions. So who does strategic planning? CEO, planning staff, senior managers. That these teams, they have some junior members, but generally they're higher leveled up. You want, when you do a strategic plan committee, you want people who are going to tell it like it is, people who are going to be very honest in their feelings, but people who are committed to organizational success as well. There's different, obviously there's different documents, there's very long, convoluted strategic plans, and then there can be strategic plans that are shorter and have a little bit less structure. probably the best approach is to have something that's somewhere in the middle, where you have a lot of detail for some parts, and then you know, certainly you draw back. You know, well, I guess what I'm saying is make sure you define each area of your strategic plan, but don't be so prescriptive or restrictive that it's trouble, people have trouble having the freedom to do things within the strategic plan which meet the strategic objectives and the strategic goals. Remember that a strategic plan is concerned with the issues, strategies, and implementations. And that their goal is to create a forward-looking document that leads to competitive success. So a company that has been really, really good at that is Hilton. Certainly, they're an international brand. Certainly, they are a brand that that has had much success. So here is a new resort world in Las Vegas. But I wanted to focus on the fact that Hilton is made up of several brands, which you can find across the world. Additionally, I also want to point out that that a lot of these companies, like Hilton and Marriott, they were certainly. They are focused on, like many of the companies we talked about, they are focused on ensuring that they have good corporate governance and they're doing the right things. In Hilton's case, they're big into helping with slavery and human trafficking, and they have a commitment to human rights. Last couple of things I want to show you on Hilton is I want to show you that they have things like a global privacy statement, which is interesting. Of course, they focus on corporate responsibility. And then I always found the Hilton hotline, which talks about ethics in business and ethical conduct. I've always found that interesting. So as a, and then this is important, it's not 911. Hilton is a very interesting company that runs very well and really has a commitment to the customer and then also running their company well. When you see something like your voice is important, that certainly indicates the importance of that practice for that company. Now, what I will say about Hilton also is that they do not just provide lip service to that. They take it very seriously. So anyway, that was the focus of this international business. And now we are moving into lecture 10, which is organizational design and control. So, you know, what do organizations do and how do people coordinate and collectively work together to get things done? So before we get into that, let us pray. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for our time together, Lord. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to talk about competitive advantage, Lord. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to discuss strategic planning and the importance of strategic planning for international firms, Lord. Thank you for just this day. And thank you for this class. I pray that as we move into the waning hours of these lectures, we have three left, but as we move into the waning hours of these lectures, I pray that you will be glorified and that you will help teach us what you need us to learn. In Jesus' name, amen.